The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
Hey, we're back. We're trying to get some answers. We had Todd Monken reportedly talking to Tampa, although there are some people who believe he might stay in Georgia. And then the case of Ryan Grubb, Washington offensive coordinator out in Seattle, flying to Tuscaloosa, reportedly being offered the job to work for Nick Saban, and Adam Rittenberg with the story. Adam, thank you so much. So what happened?
Well, Ryan Grubb was brought out to Tuscaloosa with his wife. He met with Coach Saban. He met with other people on that Alabama staff. They obviously talked about the offensive coordinator job in depth, but then he returned back to Seattle, and I'm told today that he will remain with the Washington Huskies as their offensive coordinator, meaning Alabama still needs an OC. So you're certainly one of the top targets for Alabama. I think he emerged as the target recently, but it will not be Ryan Grubb as the Alabama offensive coordinator. He also generated interest, Paul, for the Texas A&M job back in December. That led to a massive raise and a big contract extension. So he's making $2 million. He'll stay put in Seattle. Coach Michael Penix Jr., Heisman Trophy candidate, in his second year as Washington's OC. And then we'll see what Coach Saban does next.
Yeah, I can understand what he has there, but we're not used to this. I mean, first of all, in terms of Ryan Grubb, Adam, he comes all the way across the country. Seattle to Tuscaloosa is not a quick jump. He brings his family. It looks like he's taking the job, doesn't it? I mean, it did, I mean.
No, for sure. I mean, this isn't some, you know, down the list interview or some cursory interview. Nick Saban doesn't bring people to Tuscaloosa without the intent of at least strongly exploring the possibility of reaching a deal. And for whatever reason, it didn't happen this time. Now, I would point out that Ryan Grubb has spent the majority of his coaching career alongside Kalen DeBoer, who's the Huskies head coach, was with DeBoer at Fresno State as the offensive coordinator, was with him at Eastern Michigan, a couple other stops along the way. So not your standard, I just want to go work for Nick Saban situation. It would have been difficult for him to leave what is a very good situation and an excellent quarterback situation with Michael Penix to go to Alabama. It would be completely a different part of the country, working with a new coach, obviously a great coach in Nick Saban, but he would have been leaving a very comfortable situation for one that, you know, some people would say is a bit better. But I would point this out too, Paul. I think Ryan Grubb, with the interest that he's generated in this cycle, could go right from the Washington OC job to a Power 5 head coaching job. You know you can do that at Alabama, but I also think he could do that by staying put at Washington. And if that's his ultimate goal, maybe it wouldn't have dramatically improved his career. There's certainly risk on the other side. If things don't go well at Alabama and you get fired after a year, where are you in your career then?
And this may sound self-serving, but I'll say it anyway. And finally, you don't have to deal with the Feinbaum callers if you lose a game.
No doubt. And that's certainly, quality of life is something that a number of people brought up to me in conversations when Ryan emerged as one of the targets or the top target on Sunday. You know, does he want to leave a place in Washington where there's still some pressure, but you're in a pro town, you're not dealing with the 365-day-a-year pressure, and you know, he has a situation that they've built up there. They were horrible on offense in 2021. They led the nation in passing this past season, number 7 in scoring. You have a Heisman Trophy contender at quarterback in Michael Penix. Who knows what you're going to get at Alabama? Who's going to be the quarterback? Who's going to surround that quarterback? And as you note, if you don't perform, especially for a team that is now a couple of years without winning a national championship, you are going to face pressure unlike you have faced in your entire career if you're Ryan Grubb.
So, Adam, the obvious question is who is next if Grubb is out?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Now, I think Nick Saban has some options potentially. You know, Jeff Lebby's name has come up, the Oklahoma offensive coordinator, formerly at Ole Miss. But would he want to leave Oklahoma, his alma mater, after just 1 year and not a very good season, to go back to the SEC? So we'll see if that comes to fruition. His name has come up. You know, Nick Saban has gone to the NFL, or at least hired coaches that have NFL experience in the past. Could he do that again? You know, Freddie Kitchens is an Alabama Alabama alum. He was a senior analyst at South Carolina this past year, former head coach in the NFL. Does he look at somebody like that? Or does he go like the Ryan Grubb path with a coordinator who's established himself in the college game but maybe doesn't have that NFL experience like Lane Kiffin did, like Steve Sarkisian did, like Todd Monken did? You mentioned him a minute ago with Georgia. That's obviously worked out well for the Dogs.
I realize you've been reporting on Grubb, but are you hearing anything on the also vacant defensive coordinator's position at Alabama?
Right, so it's an interesting position because both are open right now. You know, I think Nick Saban on that side of the ball really historically has gone with coaches who run systems that he's familiar with or that know what he likes and wants to do with that defense. You know, Todd Grantham is in the building as an analyst. Obviously, tremendous SEC experience at multiple schools. Would they go with someone like him? If they don't, I think it will be someone who has connections to Saban, his system, and will walk in the door knowing what the head coach wants. As you know, that's a very difficult job, one of the most difficult jobs in college football, but you have to know what you're getting into when you walk in. So I think it will be somebody that has familiarity with Saban and his scheme.
I realize, Adam, Nick Saban doesn't have to sell anyone to anybody. I mean, we all know who he is and what he's done. But assuming he hired Todd Grantham, how do you think that would go over, considering Grantham's most recent past?
Yeah, I think it would be a hard sell initially for Alabama, even for Nick Saban, who doesn't really need to worry too much about how his hires go over, given his long-term history of success. But you have a guy who was at Florida and it ultimately didn't work out, who was at Georgia for many years and was on staffs that did very well but didn't reach the pinnacle like Georgia has the last couple of years. Very experienced, knows the SEC, has worked at so many different schools. Mississippi State, has worked outside of the SEC at Power 5 programs like Louisville. But I think it would be a hard sell for Nick Saban, even though he has been in the building, he knows the players, he knows Saban, and he knows what Saban wants. Those are all important things to having success on that side of the ball. I also think Alabama's defensive coordinator, for the most part, because of who your head coach is and because of who the players you have are, is a job that you're going to have some level of success. Is it going to be top 10? Is it going to be top 15, top 5? Who knows? But I think the offensive coordinator hire is probably the more important one here because you lose Bryce Young, you lose other players off of that offense, and we've seen that when Alabama has won its recent national titles, they have had elite level offenses. So they need to figure out who is that person to steer that unit forward and get back into the national championship game.
Adam Rittenberg, a lot of news coming from his little corner of the world. Adam, thanks very, very much. We appreciate it. We'll continue to watch that. National Signing Day tomorrow, and I'm sure more rumors and speculation about who will end up in Alabama. It turned out just a few minutes ago, it's being reported that D'Amico Ryans, the former Alabama star player in the mid-2000s under Mike Shula, has been or is about to be named the new head coach of the Houston Texans. We'll take a short break. More of your phone calls right after this.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Back on a Tuesday afternoon, Jacob is up next. Hello, Jacob.
Hey, Paul. I've been watching your show for a long time. I just want to steer away from the SEC and talk about the ACC. I'm from Tuscaloosa, and I'm a huge Florida State fan. I just want to know your opinion on, do you think Florida State can make it to the championship or at least the playoffs?
Yes, I do. I think Florida State is in great shape. I think Mike Norvell has weathered the storm, and it was a pretty close call a year or two ago, but he's been able to take advantage of the ACC being down and, quite frankly, Clemson not being quite as dominant as they have been in recent years. So I think it's also Florida being in flux, so it's a great moment for him. Wilson said earlier when we had him on from Baton Rouge, that Florida State LSU game in Orlando is going to be probably the most anticipated game of the first weekend.
Well, thank you for taking my call, Paul.
Thank you. Great to hear from you. Let's check in with Luke in Florida. Hello, Luke. Welcome to our show.
Hello, Paul. I am from Central Florida. I've lived here all my life. I'm almost 80 years old now. And when you were talking to John and Wilbur about their experiences in Alabama or going to Paul's Bear Bryant's university, Alabama, of course, it reminded me of a story. I know Wilbur said that he didn't have a lot of problems because his parents had taught him to respect other people and to treat them as you would have them treat you. And my parents taught me the same thing here in Central Florida, and I'm a Caucasian. Of course, obviously, they're African-American. And when I was 10 years old in 1953, I won a marble shooting championship sponsored by the VFW, and I got a trip to Portland, Oregon, and back on the train. Now, when we got on the train in West Lake Wales here, there was a black family on the train, and they had a 10-year-old girl. And, of course, myself being 10 and she being 10, we were the only kids on the train. They were going to Chicago, we were going to Chicago and then on to Portland. So she and the little girl and I just had a good time running up and down the train and just, it was a 2-day trip to Chicago, and we just had a great time back and forth. And I never thought about her being African American, although I had been in segregated schools. My mother had a housemaid that came over during the day and took care of my brother Pat and I after school. She did our laundry and that kind of thing. Her name was Ada, and she was African American. And she was like a second mother to my brother and I. But after I got back from my trip, the parents of this young girl wrote my mother a letter saying how much they were so appreciative of the fact that I played with their daughter and we kept each other entertained the whole time. And I think about that story Wilbur said, it begins with the parents and adults who teach young people racism, and it's awful the way it starts. And I had never experienced that, even though I had never been around blacks. My dad hired blacks in his parts auto parts store, and I remember my mother kept that letter for many years, and she was so proud of the fact that she had raised two boys that had none of that racism, even though we were right in the middle of the whole thing in the South.
Well, Luke, that is really an extraordinary story. I appreciate you sharing it.
Yeah, well, it reminded me when Wilbur said, you know, my parents taught me to respect people, and I know Paul Bear Bryant taught his players to do the same thing, regardless of their color. So that, you know, and it all starts with people who get, you know, as adults, they teach younger people the wrong values.
Very well said, Luke. You be well, and thanks for sharing that important message with us. Joe is in Pennsylvania. Joe?
Hey, Paul.
Hey, Joe. Welcome.
Hey, you're living here in Allentown. Hey, you said when you want to go down the list, you look for a change of direction. You got to change our direction tonight, Paul. I got a question for you.
Okay, Joe.
Do you know Tennessee at Neyland Stadium was one of the first stadiums to use AstroTurf?
Yes.
And do you know in 1969, when I played at South Carolina, we went to play Tennessee, and the AstroTurf turned black. And it lost its color. It lost its flexibility. It had a spray paint it green to look good. Talk about rug burns.
I bet.
And you know what? I was thinking about that coach from Washington coming over to Tuscaloosa with his wife to talk to Coach Saban. And, you know, maybe it was his wife's decision. Because, you know, in the late 80s, Bobby Kremins wanted to leave Georgia Tech and come coach at South Carolina. And he brought his wife with him.
Right.
And she did not want to leave Atlanta, their proactive city, to go to a passive city like Columbia, South Carolina. And that's the reason he did not take the head coaching job at South Carolina.
Well, Joe, I thought he took it and then he went back the next day.
Well, I think his wife made that decision.
Right, yeah. No, you're right.
And she didn't want to leave Atlanta to go to Columbia.
Well, I think it shows how interested he was by bringing his wife. And
yeah.
Listen,
and how much he cared about his wife.
Everybody has different reasons to go places. Well, you be well. Thanks for sharing that story with us. So let's continue with more phone calls. And Tony is up next. Hey, Tony.
Good afternoon, Paul.
Well, thank you.
I hope you're doing well.
We are doing great. Thank you.
I'm an Auburn fan, but I love Alabama quarterbacks after they leave the university.
Sure.
And I can see why Auburn's had such a tough time the last several years. You got Jalen Hurts, Tua,
Mac Jones, and Bryce.
At the Super Bowl to have an outstanding game, and I believe he will. But I've got a recommendation for Alabama. Coach Saban has a reputation of restoring broken coaches.
Yes.
And there is a coach that he ought to consider. His name is Brian Harsin. That's all I've got to say. Thank you.
You know, that might be the best suggestion I've ever heard for the Saban rehab tour. I have not talked to Coach Harsin since he left, and I don't know what he's doing. I know he stayed in Auburn through the football season because his son was playing, and I have no idea. But it's a good question. I am curious about finding out. I don't know whether Brian Harsin would be interested in that or not. He might be. I doubt it, but we'll find out. John is in St. Louis. So hello, John. John,
hey,
you there?
Paul, how you doing today?
We are doing great. Thank you.
Paul, I called last year. I don't know if you remember, after the last Super Bowl, and kind of had some issues with the halftime entertainment show. And at that time, when I talked to you and the rest of the listeners, I suggested that we start up a poll and try to get the opinion of others on what they thought about the halftime show. And I think it was probably 75 against me and 25%.
You know, John, I don't even remember who was doing the halftime show.
Well, I'm going to get cut to the chase here, Paul. I think there's some real questions and challenges with the individual, and I'm not going to mention her name, who's going to be performing at halftime. I mean, give me a break.
First of all, it's Rihanna who will be doing the halftime show.
Well, is that, and by the way, who's Rihanna? I don't know Rihanna. I want to talk Super Bowl, Paul. I want to talk about the biggest sporting event in the world.
Let me stop you right there, okay? And I'm assuming you're middle age or older.
No, I'm not middle age, Paul. I'm not middle age. I'm over 70 years old.
Okay, well,
and that's the thing. Go ahead.
Well, John, I think here, I don't know how they choose the Super Bowl acts, but we are now what, Super Bowl 51? Is that right? 55? I can't remember what it is. At some point, you kind of run through the gauntlet. Is there someone you think would
Oh, I'm glad you asked me. I'm going to talk about some talent. We're talking about the Super Bowl. We're talking history. We're talking about decades of tremendous rock talent. And I'm going to throw them out to you, and you're probably going to laugh at some of these individuals. I think we could get an ensemble of these folks to show up, and let's hear people like Nancy Sinatra and Lee Hazelwood. Let's hear Creedence Clearwater. Let's hear Herb Alpert, the Tijuana Brass.
Well, Herb, by the way, I think Herb Alpert played the Super Bowl about 50 years ago, but I could double check. And besides, I'm not even certain Herb Alpert is still alive, but I appreciate you bringing him up.
And also, let's talk about groups like the Guess Who and Three Dog Night. And on top of that, what about anybody like Willie Nelson and Waylon? I mean, Paul, the Super Bowl is representation of the United States to the rest of the world, and we have to be very open-minded on what that message is.
Well, I think we are, everyone at some point, I mean, from Michael Jackson to Bruce Springsteen to Paul McCartney to The Who to U2 have played the Super Bowl, and at some point... you mentioned Herb Alpert is alive, by the way, and kicking at 87 years old. And I'm sure he plays the trumpet as well today as he's ever played it. But it's 100 million people. The NFL is trying to make it as friendly to the audience as you can do. But I think they've hit every available classification. Bruno Mars did it a couple of years ago. Who else? Who did it last year, guys? Can't even remember.
There you go. You can't remember I'm saying.
But by the way, I agree. I mean, there have been some memorable Super... it was Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg and Kendrick Lamar, Kendrick Lamar, who is one of the biggest acts. I mean, these are big acts that you're, I realize, at 70,
I'm
what you're interested in. I mean, listen, I don't mean to be insulting, but.
It's okay. You can insult
the acts that you've mentioned, assuming they're still playing, you could probably find somewhere other than the Super Bowl. I mean, I grew up in that era, and there's not many of those people I want to see anymore.
Well, Paul. Anyway, I think what we need to do here is I think you need to throw the question out to the folks here this afternoon and say, what do you folks think about this? Let's take a poll here and, you know, let's see what the people say. The people.
But John, let me assure you, the NFL who come, they are not concerned what we're thinking. They're trying to.
Oh, I know they're
Rihanna,
not.
Rihanna, by the way, is one of the biggest acts in the world. So you may
I
not
don't
like
know who
her.
Rihanna is.
Well. Yeah. First of all, let me just stop it here. If you have to ask who Rihanna is, you are saying all you need to say about who you are in the world of contemporary music. We'll take a short break, and we're coming right back. What about Barry?
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And welcome back. Let's check in with Mark next in Mississippi. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Paul. We're talking about Super Bowl ads.
Yes.
Bruno Mars, I've never seen anything like that before in my life.
That was incredible. I agree with you. That was one of the best ever. Well,
how would you...
Yeah, I mean, John's certainly entitled to his opinion, even if it's wrong.
That's correct.
Well, you're having a good show today.
Thank
you very much. I mean, I think what you have to do, the Super Bowl has tried literally every act. I mean, I am a fan of 60s and 70s music, and I've seen some of the acts that have come through the Super Bowl, and I had my hand over my face going, well, can't they find somebody younger than this? I mean, there's such a thing as, just because, I mean, there are exceptions to that. I mean, Mick Jagger's 80 years old, and he's still doing the job, but some of those acts are very tired, and just because John hasn't heard of Rihanna doesn't mean she shouldn't play. She will, and I'm sure she will be fine. AJ is up next. Hello, AJ.
Good afternoon, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Hey, I just wanted to commend you on how you did actually handle the call with John right there. I'm not real sure that he's changed his underwear since 75. I mean, come on. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings.
Willie is turning 90 in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, we're going to roll him out in the wheelchair.
I've seen Willie Nelson, but I really don't care to see him anymore.
Exactly. Well, maybe next we could dig up Elvis and give one more.
Now, I will tell you, I am sorry Elvis never did the Super Bowl in his prime. But unfortunately, his prime did not last much longer than when the Super Bowl started. Elvis could have done the Super Bowl. And I really don't think they ever considered him. But... I really don't know. I'm trying to think of some other 85 or 90 year old acts we could get for John.
Absolutely.
I mean,
no
are
doubt.
Are Up With People still around? Remember that group? I think they did the first Super Bowl.
Maybe REO Speedwagon. We'll call them.
No, they're way too contemporary for this guy.
Anyway, hey, I wanted to ask you about the guys that were calling in, and they said. And their questions was in relation to what makes a good caller or what quantifies a good caller. And to be honest with you, you're the one that makes a good caller. I mean, and I'm not trying to be a leg humper. I'm just,
Well, let me say this to you, AJ. I work hard at it, but there are some calls. Now, I thought John was a good caller. Why? Because he was so absurd that it was funny.
And you got a few jabs of sarcasm or...
There's no rhyme or reason. Sometimes no matter what you do, it just doesn't work.
Absolutely, absolutely. You can't fix stupid sometimes, Paul.
No, you're right.
My mind went blank. Anyway... I was going to ask you about anyway, I lost train of thought right there.
So AJ, would you say a bad call is when somebody calls in and their mind goes blank?
I would say that, and or if it was Jim Crow Jordan from Tuscaloosa, anytime he calls it is a terrible call.
Okay, you saved yourself there. Well done. Thank you for the call. I don't think Jim is going to like that, though, assuming he understands it. Bill is up next in Alabama. Hello, Bill.
Hey, Paul. Bill Lumpkin. How are you doing?
Oh, my goodness. How are you, Bill?
I'm good. You've been doing all this Coach Bryant stuff. I've tried to get in for a few days.
Well, I'm glad you made
it. Thought I'd throw in my opinion.
Please.
And, you know, my dad was writing a book on Coach Bryant. He started when he was 82, and then he quit about, I guess we got 85 or 86. I think he felt like he might violate some stories. But one of the interesting chapters was on integration.
Okay. Please share with us.
He even mentioned you. He said, you know, people called Powell Feinbaum show, and they put that propaganda out that it had to do with Sam Cunningham and USC, which is so far from the truth. And he said it had to do with the 66 team that when they lost, that he quoted Jimmy Fuller saying that he apologized for them losing the national championship because they were all white. And then, you know, they had five black walk-on players the next year. And then his biggest reasoning was the 1969 season and his hatred for Tennessee. Tennessee had a player by the name of Jackie Walker and a black player, linebacker. And Tennessee beat Alabama that year 41-14, and Jackie Walker intercepted a pass and ran it back for a touchdown. And his premise was that that helped integration more than Sam Cunningham at any time. That was part of what he wrote in this, what he was going to write in the book.
Bill, I'm curious because how far did he get with this project?
He got probably a half to three quarters. I actually had thought, you know, about finishing it.
Well, that's right. We've had this conversation. Yeah, I remember talking to you about this once.
But after all this the last week, I thought again, hey, maybe I should finish it. It's still pretty relevant. Everybody still knows who Coach Bryant is.
Bill, I walked out of here Thursday going, man, there's still a lot here that I think is really compelling about Coach Bryant.
Yeah, you know, at the funeral, I guess I tagged along with you and my dad. Kind of, I got, you know, I was sports editor, Crimson White that year.
Right.
And I got, you know, even at his last press conference, you know, I would have never got in there if it wasn't for him.
Oh, yeah.
And I think my dad still might have that on cassette tape somewhere. I was trying to look through his office the other day. I was like, he probably still got that on cassette tape.
I've always told this joke, Bill, that the day of his final game, Coach Bryant invited some of his old friends to come down to his suite. And, of course, you ended up going there as well. But the only reason I got there is that I think Bill, your dad wanted somebody to write it up. He had something else to do that day. I think he was going to go see Coach Bryant later.
You know, the funniest thing about that story is, you know, Jimmy Smothers is the one that wanted to have to take the picture at the end. And he goes, hey, can we get a picture? And he asked Billy Barner to take that picture. And then Jimmy ended up in the very back of the picture. You can barely see him. And with one of those old cameras. And, you know, that's a great, I think it's a picture that I treasure.
I've got that
and
picture.
There's not many people left in that picture are alive.
No, that's the weirdest thing, Jimmy. Bill, because the two of us were on the young end. I think we were the two youngest in that picture. And it's just ironic that, 40 years is a long time. But I will never forget that hour as long as I live. I mean, it's you won't.
Yeah, and you know, it was funny later and after he had passed, you know, when I was working for Jimmy Smothers, and he had become very close with Mary Harmon. And, you know, when my dad would go down there, we'd go to the house a lot. He'd call out there, and I remember one time he called and told Mary Harmon we were coming, and she was like, can you go do our grocery shopping for us? And a lot of times at the bowl game, Coach Bryant couldn't go. He'd call and get my dad to be Mary Harmon's escort.
I went back and read the article the other day, the night that Coach Bryant announced his retirement. It was the next, the story that came out the morning of. And in there, there's a quote I have in the article from Mary Harmon. And I, as you told me that, I remember how I got it because I'm pretty sure, I don't remember where Bill was, your dad. But I can guarantee you at that age, I did not have Paul Bryant's home phone number, but I know who did, and it was your dad.
You know, I've got his phone directory here in his office, and it's got home phone numbers for Woody Hayes, Paterno, I started to call him one day and just see who answered the phone.
That is
go,
funny.
You know
no,
who this phone number used to belong to? After he had passed, Jimmy and I went to a basketball game, and we went by the house to see Mary Harmon. And Pat Trammell Jr. was at the house with his girlfriend, and they were watching the movie The Bear.
Oh, my goodness.
And, of course, they hated every bit about it. No, Mary Harmon's like, I never called him Bear. I called him Paul. But I was looking at his books. They were all over there, and he'd written in the margins. And she goes, you can take those home with you if you'd like. I think, oh, no, ma'am, I could not. I couldn't take those home. She goes, yeah, take them home. You can just bring them back the next time you come. I think, no, ma'am, I couldn't do that. I just wouldn't feel comfortable. And I didn't do it. And she passed about 3 days later, and I was thinking, well, I'd have had every one of those books. Nobody would ever know what happened to them. No,
well, Bill,
what they,
I'll never
what
forget.
They were.
I can't. Thanks so much for – let's talk soon, Bill. Bill Lumpkin Jr.'s dad I work for at the Birmingham Post-Herald, and I'll never forget I got Mrs. Harmon, Mary Harmon, the night before Coach Bryant officially announced, and I said, I need to talk to Coach Bryant. I was scared to death. It was like 11:45 at night. She said, he's out recruiting. I'm like going, he's about to announce his retirement the next day, but I let it go. We'll take a short break, and we're coming right back.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we're back. Squirrel is on the line. Hello, Squirrel.
Thank you for taking my call. And I really enjoyed that conversation just now with Bill Jr. And, you know, he mentioned that movie, The Bear. There hasn't been a whole lot of Bear Bryant movies, but of the ones that were made, that was probably easily the worst. Wouldn't you agree?
Squirrel, I remember vividly, I think it was 1984, I covered the world premiere at some rundown theater in Birmingham.
Of The Bear?
Yes. And
with Gary Busey? Was Gary Busey there?
Gary was there.
Was the girl that played Mary Harmon there?
I think everyone was there. It was a big deal. I mean, everybody, the guy's name was Larry. What was the guy's name? I'll have to look it up. Larry somebody.
I went to high school with the girl who played Mary Harmon.
Oh, yeah. Well, she was there. I mean, the whole crew was there. And
yeah,
so I will tell you the story. So Gary Busey, there was a big event later after the, but I had to get my story in. So I followed Gary Busey into the restroom at the theater.
Is that when he did the line?
Yeah, okay. I mean, people have heard me tell this story, and he was in there doing drugs.
he was getting
and he said, like, he said, like, what the blank do you want? And I said, I would like to interview you. And he said, what? And so I essentially interviewed him while he was snorting cocaine.
That's crazy.
But.
That's crazy.
I doubt he remembers that. But I wrote a scathing review. I said, somebody sent it to me not long ago. I said the headline at the top of the front page was The Bear. What's that's the name of the movie? The Bear was a bomb.
you can't find that movie anywhere. The family squashed it, from what I heard.
And
you can't find it.
The local, there was a big chain in town, and the guy called me the next day and said, you are banned from our movie theaters for the rest of your life. I said, I don't think you can do that. But it was pretty amazing.
Yeah, and I went to high school with her, and I guess there's another girl, an actress from Oak Ridge. Guess who that is? Born in Oak Ridge.
So who was that again?
Megan. There's another actress born in Oak Ridge, Megan Fox.
Oh yeah, she's a pretty big actress.
Yeah, she's kind of nutty. Thanks for taking my call. Aloha.
Thank you. it was truly the worst movie that has ever been made. It lasted. I mean, the family was completely embarrassed because there was nothing real about it. Gary Busey was not very good, and he's a great actor, but it lasted a couple of weeks and shut down, and I don't think it's ever resurfaced anywhere. Brian originally wanted John Wayne to play him. Unfortunately, Wayne died before the movie started filming. We'll take a short break.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.